Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for all of Star Wars. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Ahsoka, Season 1, Episode 4, Part 4, Fallen Jedi. Aaron, how are you feeling about the midpoint of this season?
I like this episode quite a bit more than last episode. I had some new things to say. Lord Brian, Darth Swanson, I haven't learned his name quite yet, obviously, but he's so fucking cool. I love this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Darth Swanson, like I said, he's my dude, he's my guy, he's my buddy, he's my new favorite character. He's just the coolest guy, and it breaks my heart that we're probably going to get him for this season, because the real life guy, who also seems like a hell of a guy, passed away. I'm a sucker for lightsaber battles. Do you remember what I said when we first went into the Phantom Menace? Like, you know, we were all talking about our expectations. Do you remember what I said?
Boy, that was felt like almost 30 years ago. No, I'm sorry, I don't remember that.
I said, guys, I just want a really cool lightsaber battle. And you'll recall that I was the only one walking out of that theater even remotely happy, because Duel of the Fates fucking delivered.
Yeah, and one of the coolest.
I thought this episode had a lot of really good lightsaber battles that had a lot of different intensities and skill levels, and I appreciated that. I am disappointed that they're going with the... What seems to me that we're not going to get the Thrawn until much later this season. Like, maybe at the 2/3 mark, probably more likely at the 3/4 mark, like a penultimate episode kind of thing. And I was hoping, I mean, that was the thing that sealed the deal for me, that we'd get some Thrawn. So I'm a little disappointed at that, but I don't know. This is a connecting episode that there's a couple other things that annoy me as a Star Wars fan. It seems like Star Wars is just going to bless the Holdo maneuver, and hyperspace travel will never be the same. Going to be the same. I don't know how I feel about that. How'd you feel about the episode?
I have some quibbles about Jedi Force powers, you know, the same Star Wars complaints that I have about the degradation there. But overall, I like this episode. I think they're really making me dislike Sabine. And that's probably a good thing long term. I think the dramatic possibilities here are pretty strong. So while I feel the discomfort of strongly disliking her right now, I'm sure that will pay off later. So I'm giving them that latitude.
Yeah, and I'm also giving them latitude that they've set all this stuff up, that there is some, you know, bad blood between Ahsoka and Sabine that they still haven't really talked about. There is a fundamental lack of trust that they are, I think I'm getting off the screen, you know, that... you never ask a partner, can I count on you in these type of situations? Like, you either know, or asking ain't going to give you the self-assurance, you know? Yeah. Like, at the best, you're putting that person on notice that I'm watching you, which already shows you that the trust is gone, right?
Yeah.
So I think they're doing a good job on that. I am kind of gobsmacked by the final scene. I don't know what the fuck that means, but I am very curious to see Ahsoka meeting a redeemed Anakin Skywalker on the other side of the Jedi Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah, I want to talk about where they are and what this is and who this is. Literally, like, is this Hayden Christensen standing there on a set and they're...
Did Hayden Christensen put on pants and go to a studio, or did he just...
Or did he get on Zoom with some ping pong balls glued to his face?
Did they even have to do that? They already had a mocap from the...
Fair.
The Obi-Wan shit. So I think yeah, he just made a phone call one afternoon to Lucas. The Skywalker sound, and they did the rest.
Oh, his agent made the call. He didn't even call. His agent made the call, said, hey, we'd like... Hayden wants some work. Could you guys whip up a digital replica?
Yeah, can you train
that?
You got the prequels, right? Can you use those pieces of trash to train an Anakin AI so that my client can get paid, please? Thank you.
Yeah.
It's the least you can do for destroying this man's career.
To be fair, I think he destroyed his own career with his other choices of movies.
Did he?
You know?
Did he?
Look, I like some of his other movies, but apparently no one else did.
The only one I saw and I quite liked him in it was, I forget what the name of this
Jumper
movie was.
Jumper is what I liked.
Oh, Jumper was good too. Yeah. I liked him in that where he was the fabulist that was working at the Washington Post. He was just making shit up and he got a Pulitzer for it. And it's about No, it wasn't Spotlight. That's Mark Ruffalo busting child predators. But this was okay. Him. Like, it's essentially just being caught in his own web of lies and like going from this revered like up and coming young journalist to.
God, that sounds so familiar, but I can't think of it.
Shattered Glass. That's what it was. Shattered Glass.
Oh, never heard of that.
Yeah, Chloe Sevigny's in it. It's good stuff.
I
don't know if that was him. I don't know if that was him or digitally de-aged version of him. It kind of looks like him.
Uh-huh. It looks like it could be both. It could be him and it could be digitally manipulated as well to look a little bit more like some era of Anakin. I don't even know what era of Anakin that is, you know? Is it like post-fall visual but like pre-fall mentality? I'm not sure, because it looked a little bit older than he did in the prequels.
Well, also I'm trying to me it looked a lot like his Force Ghost at the end of the Return of the Jedi,
for sure,
you know. Yeah. It's which is I don't think an era of clothing he ever actually wore. I don't think he ever actually had the full, you know, tan master's robes, right? He's always had that kind of like,
yeah,
Luke
not
Skywalker,
while he was a
Return
good guy,
Jedi, dark, yeah, very dark colors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe it's because they cheaped out and they just pasted Hayden Christensen's face over whatever
Obi-Wan.
Shaw's
Obi-Wan.
Yeah, the old pasty white guy that they had for Darth Vader for
not Robert Prowse, the guy who played him without the mask.
Yeah.
I don't know. So overall, I like this episode. And I'm kind of excited to see what they do with this going mm-hmm. forward. It looks like they've pretty much dead-ended everybody who would be on to the trail of Baylan and Morgan and those people. But, like, Anakin showing up is the wild card, right? I'm sure he's going to sort of point her in the right direction.
Yeah, Anakin, I couldn't help but notice, and I guess this is a visual motif that Dave Filoni introduced late into the run of the 73 episodes of Clone Wars and 56 episodes of Rebels that have aired canonically. I feel like that's, but what I noticed not knowing any of that is it looked like they were inside the star map.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah,
I was wondering
in the credit sequence.
Yeah, I wondered if something happened when Ahsoka touched that, you know, like, is she like the Nazi from Raiders where she's going to...
Yeah, look at her hand. Oh, I see.
Yeah, but
there's the star bridge.
She's not going to know to subtract a qubit to honor the Jedi gods, though.
Mm-mm.
So
not going to have the other side of it. It's a sphere, lady. You need it. Need it all.
So she's gonna get lost in a void with the Purgils, but she'll ride a Purgil wave out. I think is what's going to happen.
Sure.
No, I'm content to, but that's where I like, surely they're, you know, Sabine, you know, they're going to be able to follow them to, but I do wonder, like, with what hyperjump drive.
I mean, they could probably build the same thing that Morgan built, but it would take
a
while.
In the time frame, that's what I'm saying. Like, can you whip mm-hmm. that up in a week? Because I feel like anything longer than a week is you're going to be heir to the Empire time.
Yeah. And I wonder kind of fleet Thrawn's got on the other side. What kind of support he's got, right? Is he like stranded on a planet by himself, or did he jump out with a bunch of SSDs? And
it sounded like the Purgil like took half his ship, so he doesn't even have a full Star Destroyer. But I'm curious about that myself, because you know, that was a lot of the trilogy of Heir to the Empire was Thrawn. He's returned from the outer reaches, but he doesn't have a fleet. He doesn't have a men. He doesn't even have like unquestioned loyalty. Like the trilogy is about him acquiring those things that he needs.
Yeah.
So I assume, and we got some feedback that kind of illuminates like Filoni's timeline, how he plans to introduce, expand, and then conclude the Thrawn cycle. So we'll talk about that in the feedback section. But I'm content to just kind of wait. I feel like I'm already over. Like I think this is not going to be in the Mando zone, which is like pretty good Star Wars, but like Saturday morning level. Like this is actually trying to tell a cohesive story that's not just like go on this mission, go on this mission, go on this mission, go on this mission mm-hmm. finale. It's doing something. So it's like I don't think it can be as good as Andor, but
yeah,
its ceiling now is above Mandalorian, I would say. But the floor is, they're still like, if they have a really bad 5, 6, 7, we could be back in Boba terms. So,
oh, for sure.
We'll see. We're not interested in Jedi protocol. We'll be right back.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. It's time for your training, Padawan. Here's more Tribe of Two.
All right, well, let's get into the recap. We start off with Hu Yang trying to repair the busted ship. Ahsoka tells Sabine that they might have to strand Ezra wherever he is in order to keep the Imperial loyalists from getting to Thrawn. And Sabine tells Ahsoka, "You can count on me. I'm great. I'm loyal. I don't lie to my friends at all." And then they start trying to find the ground base.
She's weak. She doesn't lie. She's just weak.
She lies, too.
Does she lie?
Yeah, she said she wouldn't take that map.
From a different point of view.
Well, don't Obi-Wan me.
Ahsoka wanted her to take the map so she could decipher it, which she did. So it all worked out, you know?
And then she wanted her to give the map to Bail-on so that she could meet Anakin, because she's always been a big fan and she misses
him.
Yeah,
you know what Sabine feels like? She feels a lot like Ellie from The Last of Us, where it's like she's infuriating because of some of the things she's doing, but the thing is I don't think she's not a teenage girl, right?
she
like could be gotta be in her mid-20s. That's the thing.
I'm not
that's
certain.
Yeah, and I maybe some of the delicious irony is watching Ahsoka deal with someone just like her.
Okay,
because that's what I'm guessing is that there is a lot of like Anakin and Ahsoka energy between Ahsoka and Sabine. Mm-hmm. But again, that's the stuff I'm gathering as a not huge fan of the Clone Wars and Rebels. I haven't had time to see all 27 seasons of those. So,
yeah, can I count on you? You know you can. That's maybe the worst response. I'm guessing there's some kind of Rebels, Clone Wars shit that they're like referencing here, where like, yeah, Sabine did come through in a pinch for Ahsoka somewhere, and so she's saying, you know you can because you have experience with this. But the only experience I have with Sabine is she is completely unreliable. She lies to your face. Yeah, she betrays her friends at every turn. So as a new watcher, that is a line that falls extremely flat to me. And Ahsoka, and I feel like Ahsoka's a dummy for even believing it for a second.
I think it's fair that 4 episodes in that I just go with that these people have fought in many battles together and have forged a bond of trust. But the thing is like it's been
broken. But it was broken at the beginning.
It's
yeah,
been
we start broken.
And they're telling us in this episode. So to me, this is as much about Ahsoka's failings as a teacher and as a mentor and a leader as it is Sabine's failure to be a trustworthy friend.
Sure. I think that line is 10 times better if she says, you know, you can't. Because then she's saying, I'm going to do whatever I can to find Ezra.
True.
And she's being honest and therefore is trustworthy. I think you say, you know, you can't. And it's a much better line, but it probably betrays all the history they have up to then. So,
yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's the other question is if their positions were. You know, I feel like it's easy to be the person that's taken hostage by the bad guy and be like, just shoot us, kill us both. And I'd rather be in that position than the person holding the gun. Because I wonder, like, if Ahsoka actually had the map in her hand and a gun to its head or lightsaber to its hand and she was in the same position, would she give up, Ezra? Because that's the thing. It's like, this is the last hope that you'll ever see your friend again.
Sure.
So it's a big deal, and I get why she wobbles a bit on it a bit. But I don't know. It does make her out to be extreme. The other thing is like Darth Balin or Lord Balin, Darth Swanson, is not a bad guy.
TBD.
Like, I think he's really. I do think he really thinks he's doing things for the greater good. Now, so did Thanos. But I'm like, he's not wicked. Does that make sense? He's not evil.
Well, he says something
Sabine
later.
Is keying to that, right?
He says something later, about, you know, having to destroy to create. And while this is true in its purest sense, it also completely lacks any context. What is the thing you're destroying and what is the thing you're creating? And is it worth creating that thing? Is it worth destroying this one thing to create the other thing? And in this case, I would say absolutely not, because what he's trying to create is, I'm assuming, something very bad for most people. And he's destroying something greater.
What if he was trying? What if he sees the obvious corruption of the New Republic that has been well told throughout Andor, throughout Mandalorian, throughout? I mean, we see the cracks, and there's now Imperial loyalists all throughout the organization. What if he sees that and is like, "This New Republic is not it. It's not even close to being the old Republic. It needs to be destroyed before it's like a poorly set bone." And like, we got to break it again or it's going to heal wrong and it'll never be fixed. That's what I'm getting.
Okay, that's the thing he's destroying. What is he creating? We don't have enough information
to know
that.
Republic. I think that's what whose
definition
is.
Yeah,
alone.
In what regard?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he's actually a good guy. I'm just saying I don't think he's evil, and I think Sabine is recognizing that, and it's something that she's like, even the way he went from calling Ahsoka her master to her former master in the span of 3 sentences. I think Darth Swanson here is just taking her as his another apprentice, which I don't know how the hell that all works out.
Yeah, I don't know if you're allowed to do that.
That's another gray Jedi thing. You get to have two apprentices.
Sure. Here's
each
the thing.
Younger
here's what I'm giving.
And more lovely than the last. Well, I don't know, Darth Swanson. Don't disappoint me here. Disappoint me.
Here's what I'll give him. He's more trustworthy than Sabine. He at least keeps his word.
It does seem.
And he is doing what he thinks is right.
Yeah.
I reserve the right to judge his morality here, but I'll need more information. Let's say he looks like a bad guy. I'm pretty sure when your force spirit turns your lightsaber red, you're a bad guy.
It's orange. Remember, we've gone over this. It's orange.
That's close enough to red for me.
It's orange red, okay? It's orange red at best.
I'm going to get the light spectrum analyzer out and make sure. I want to see how far he's fallen, this fallen Jedi.
But yeah, you know, and I guess like the other thing, and if it turns out he is evil, I'll go lawful evil over chaotic evil 6 days a week
sure.
or twice on Sunday.
Indiscriminate killings, cruelty for the sake of cruelty.
Someone
those
you can make
are...
deals with, you can ally against the greater, you can, you know, to a greater evil. They'll keep their words, not going to
those are the positive qualities. Yeah. I was going with the negative ones, the cruelty and the indiscriminate killing and those things. I don't want to see those in my bad guys. I want to see bad guys like this. Honestly, this is a well-written bad guy, a guy who has his own reasons for the things he's doing. We don't know quite what they are yet, but we're pretty sure they're not good.
He's just huge, man. The dude looks like he's broad as a fucking barn.
He's somehow as scary as Darth Vader without the helmet, and that's kind of impressive.
Yeah, that's what it's like. He is very much Darth Vader in his size and menace, but he's more grandfatherly in his his demeanor and his attitude. He's even got that Jedi thing where he calms himself when, you know, in the middle of like battles and things, and like tries to sit to himself in the Force. There's a lot going on in the hood, and this to me is EU when you do something that's not exactly in the Star Wars canon, but it's like you're riffing off a piece of Star Wars canon, exploring gray Jedis and the lines between evil and good. I think it's a great character. Love the design. I love the pauldrons they're putting on these guys. I know that was like a Clone Wars thing, but I always thought that looked good. Like, they're Jedi fucking knights. Like, maybe the masters ditch the armor because they can just go with the robes because they're the fucking masters, but I think the Jedi Knights running around in armor looks fucking cool.
Agreed.
More pauldrons.
Well, let me ask you this. Can I start calling the Imperial loyalists the rebels now? Or will that be too confusing?
Yes,
because aren't
they
rebelling
against
the actual government? Yeah,
the legitimate government of the galaxy. Yeah.
How the tables have turned. I won't do that because it'll be super confusing.
Rebels isn't a generic term for good guys. Okay.
No, definitely not.
Just like you said, about depends what you're rebelling against, whose moral code. Yeah.
Yeah, they're officially the rebels, but I'll call them Imperial loyalists because it's less confusing. There's a droid who spots the location of Ahsoka's ship and reports back to Baylan, so he sends Shin and the guards to attack him. Baylan already impressing me in this episode. Is that a note of fear in your voice? Experience.
Such a fucking great line.
Yep. I like it a lot.
Yeah. I've been around where we overstay our welcome.
So let's calculate this thing and get out of here.
I thought the scene is like so great. It's like the guards will not delay them long, but you will. Like that's I got a little bit of a crush on Darth Swanson.
Ahsoka sees that Sabine is nervous, and Sabine says, "Don't worry about me. I'm fine." And they briefly continue their discussion about possibly stranding Ezra. They'll kind of have this conversation a couple of times throughout this episode.
See, that's what I was trying to get at. Like, I think this scene tells me that Sabine doesn't believe that Ahsoka would do the right thing when the stakes are that high. Probably because this is something that, from a certain point of view, she's observed from Ahsoka before.
For some reason, I believe Ahsoka when she says she's willing to make that sacrifice. Especially when she's calling out to destroy the map later.
So it's like, let's say that you and I are on a diet, okay? And we go to an ice cream shop and you're like, you know, Aaron, you can't really have that double scoop waffle cone. Single scoop in a cup, fatty. And like, you're right, Jim, we're trying to lose weight here. And then I go to the bathroom, come out, and you're eating a triple scoop waffle cone.
Yeah.
And then the next year, we're still trying to lose weight. And you're like, can I count on you in our weight loss journey? And I'm like, well, if you were confronted with a triple scoop right now, would you still? And like, when the stakes are this high, when the scales are this high, yes, I would. And I'd be like, yeah, I don't know. And I'm guessing that's kind of like where Sabine and Ahsoka is, with less ice cream and more rebellion and warfare. But
you might have lost me in that metaphor.
That's honestly.
I was thinking about a triple scoop cone, and I'm like,
I don't write
ice
these
cream.
Things out. I sometimes lose myself. But the point is, I think Sabine. They're telling me, and I think there's a lot of history here that says that there is a big betrayal, a big breach of trust that lost Sabine. I mean, we know the Mandalorians, like, they lost everything, and she lost her family in particular. So
yeah.
I think that she thinks Ahsoka will bend when it's her principles or her relationships on the line, and that's giving Sabine moral license to do it too.
Gotcha. She's saying you don't have as much at stake here, because
Ezra's, and I think that's friend. Also true. I think Sabine and Ezra were the closest of them, and that's the thing. Sure. It's like might even been going. Oh, so I don't usually give a shit, but someone tell me, a Rebels fan, were Ahsoka? I'm sorry. Were Sabine and Ezra intimate or heading in that direction? Was it like a will they, won't they in the last few seasons?
That'd be weird, because he said your sister, you know. I'm pretty sure no.
You're right.
And that's my guess.
But the other thing is, like, I think Ahsoka is like, you know, she's a Clone Wars character, and then Rebels started, and then she comes in like after Rebels is going for a bit. So like I think that that's another thing, that maybe Sabine deep down doesn't think that her connection with Ezra is as strong as the connection that Sabine has with Ezra.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know,
I can see that for sure.
Yeah. Kind of like, well, if this was Anakin, for example, and this was 5 years ago before you guys rage quit your relationships, would you do the same? And I said, I have a little bit of sympathy for Sabine. If you've been kind of hot, you know, serving under a high-handed Jedi who doesn't necessarily keep the letter of their word, and they're now they're like all up your ass when it's your best friend on the line. I could see that being something that's not exact, you know, but like the relationship that she's got with Ahsoka is not as strong as the one she's hoping to preserve with Ezra, maybe.
Sure. No, I get that. I'm not sure why you're casting aspersions against Ahsoka. I've not seen her say or do anything that are at odds with either one.
Either one what?
So far she's blameless. She does not say things to people and then do the opposite that I've seen.
Oh yeah,
but
no,
you seem
I'm,
to be casting her that way.
I'm surmising because of what Darth Swanson says at the end of this episode, that your master didn't trust you and it led to your entire family dying. So there is a breach.
Was she trustworthy?
Well,
she doesn't seem trustworthy right now. I'm putting that blame on Sabine based on what I've seen. But it could be totally misplaced. I'm open to that. I haven't seen.
Yeah, I guess I'm maybe more open until, because like I said, someone has told me that, and it's not like Sabine's like, that's bullshit, that's not true. It's obviously something that was landing with her. So I got one character that I seem to respect telling me something. It's like I need to.
But he's like reading her thoughts, and I could see her really blaming Ahsoka when it was actually her own fault.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just
need to watch all 17 seasons of Rebels.
Well, I need them to catch me up in this show, yeah. Right?
Right.
That's what I really need. And they're starting to.
Well, do.
Ahsoka. Well, no, let's go back to Hu Yang. He repairs part of the ship, and then he's attacked, and there's a droid fight, which I think is fun. I kind of love these silly droid punches.
Catch these shoulder hands, dude. Like, it's kinda...
Oh, yeah, it's little T-Rex arms that come out.
Yeah.
Is it like a backpack that he's using to work on things? Is it like helping hands when you're working
on
electronics?
It does seem like, yeah, he's able to, like, do four lightsabers, but he was using them. The one of those little T-Rex arms, pulled the plug, you know, pull, like, tripped the circuit breaker or whatever, which I thought it makes Young look smart too. Like, how do I get the women's attention to come out and save me when I got a droid hand covering my mouth, my speaker?
Yeah,
I thought it was cool. And he held his own against that Sith droid more than I thought.
Yeah, he's not a combat droid necessarily, but he does do the training. Yeah. So,
and he's not C-3PO, like,
no.
You know, C-3PO's like got the athleticism of your average 77-year-old. this guy can fucking move.
Yeah. So Sabine and Ahsoka, you know, realize they're in trouble. They manage to fight off these droids, these guards. But the repair that Hu Yang made is destroyed in the process. And Ahsoka tells him, "Get the transmitter online. We're gonna head off toward the base."
I do wonder why Yang wasn't armed out there, though. When Ahsoka says, you know, keep an eye out, we're on, you know, we're in enemy territory. Like, wouldn't it be cool if he had, like, four lightsabers on him?
Yeah. They've got him. They've got him in storage. I saw him.
Got tons of generic lightsabers, but maybe they're all low-power training sabers. Mm-hmm. I was just hoping to see him do some lightsaber fighting. I know he doesn't have the Force or anything, but hell, he's trained Jedi for 18,000 years or whatever.
Right? He knows the kata, for sure.
How old did he say he was? Because now I'm confused with Demerzel from...
Like, me too.
I'm getting all my round, big numbers confused. But I think he, like... The Old Republic's been around for 10,000 years, so it's no more than that, right? Maybe he's training Jedi before Republic times.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Oh, well. A long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yoda's a baby to him.
So let's go over to Hera, who decides she's going to go after Thrawn on her own. If the council won't let her take a bunch of ships, she'll just take one ship. And she flies off to do that, and Carson and his X-Wings go with her.
Yeah, Captain Teeva, her old buddy from Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder how he... shoehorned himself into this. He's like a ranger from an out, like,
right? Isn't he supposed to be
outer
way out?
Realms? Yeah,
yeah.
But this might be outer. They've never really established where we are in the galaxy. But also, like, you know, when you're dealing with like witches of Dathomir, and I feel like this is kind of like outer rim stuff too. Maybe. So maybe it works out.
Maybe.
But I like him. He's a cool guy. He's actually got a really cool story. I was reading an interview with him where he talks about how this all, you know, like, I think it was Favreau, or it might have been Fellini, who saw him in a little independent film that he liked him so much. Like, I just want to make you a Star Wars person. Hmm. And this guy's like a huge Star Wars fan. And I don't know. It's like, it made me smile. This like old Star Wars guy, this old Star Wars Korean fan, gets tapped. Like, can you imagine, like, 10 years from now, like, some George Lucas's daughter comes and says, "I want to make you a Jedi or something"? Like, how fucking cool would that be?
I need to go back and seriously edit some of these podcasts. I need to take out a lot of the shit I said.
No. They're going to respect the fact that you were a straight shooter. You're respected on both sides of Star Wars aisle, right?
Okay. Yeah, Star Wars does a mea culpa and says, you know,
George Lucas's daughter, after the Mouse Wars of 2031, rebuys the Star Wars IP for $5 and a spit handshake with Bob with Mecha Iger.
Yeah,
and then you're going
Bob,
to be tapped
Bob A. Iger
to be Darth Jim, and I'm there for it. I can't wait. You'll be my new favorite Dark Jedi.
I want to see what color Mrs. Disney's lightsaber is, because I need to know
red,
who I'm following here.
Blood red.
Shit.
Yeah, you don't. But Lucas's daughter, she's got blue, so she's good. There you go. You know, I mean, that's dead giveaway, honestly.
Okay,
Sabine's biggest reservation is how orange red Darth Swanson saber is.
Mm-hmm. Blue, green, purple, yellow, I'll take them all, but red's right out.
It'd suck if you're a colorblind Jedi, man. You wouldn't know who.
Oh, yeah.
Red, green? It's like, oh my god, all these lightsabers are gray. Who's the bad? Yeah, it'd be bad.
Yeah. I haven't seen a gray saber. We've seen a dark saber. How about a UV saber? Can we get
oh yeah, if you want to work on your tan.
Black lightsaber?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. The one side of their face is just ultra tan because that's the part they hold it on.
That's part of that lightsaber technique. Is lots of twirling and switching sides of your body.
Yeah.
You want to. You don't want to get one side tan.
All right, let's go back out to.
Is it on a scale of one to Casey Anthony? What's the mothering being shown by Syndulla here, bringing her son into not an active war zone, into an unknown shit show?
Mm-hmm.
Your buddies jumped into a system where there a multiple Sith were building a giant hyperspace ring of unknown power, and then the comms get cut, and you're like, "Fuck it, let's bring the 7-year-old."
I love it. Let's do it. The kid wants to be a Jedi. Let's throw him in the deep end. Show him what he's got in store for him.
All right. All right.
Scare him straight, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's fine.
All right. Let's go back out to Morgan and Baylon.
It's like when the Steve the Crocodile Hunter had his, like, you know, newborn.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's just feeding giant crocodiles with the dead chickens with one hand. He's got his naked 6-month-old daughter in one arm. He's like, oh, look at the saw. Yeah, it's the same. It's some people when your mom and dad's a big enough hero, you can do shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can just do shit like that.
They'll let you. Let's go back out to Morgan and Baylon. They plot the course using the star map. Ahsoka and Sabine race to stop them, but they're intercepted by Shin and Marok, and they fight. Ahsoka kills Marok, and Sabine tells her to go get the map while she handles Shin. Have we commented on how slow they're running?
Well,
you got somebody with 500 pounds of gear on their back keeping up with supposedly a Jedi.
See, this is what Obi-Wan meant when he said he couldn't train him as good as Yoda. He got to the fast running point and just Anakin kept on tripping, could not get it going. Obviously, he can't teach Ahsoka, so that explains that line from the OT. did we get to where Darth Ezra gets bisected? Did you recap up to that point?
Yes.
Okay.
That was weird. Also, are we going to stop calling him Darth Ezra now? Or
No.
just murdered her friend.
When someone explodes into a cloud of irradiated green dust, it's not over, okay? This is like killing that dusty Nazi in Hellboy. You think just because that corpse is laying on a table and you can dissect it, that person... No, it's got dust for veins. This person's got dust for veins. I don't trust it. I don't know how you kill it.
Yeah.
But that's not... just half bisecting it with a lightsaber, not going to do it.
Here's the thing that's weird about it is Shin looks over at it and she's like, what the fuck? I don't even think she knows what Marok is.
That's interesting because I mistook her expression as like shock and outrage
that he
like,
was one of my Ahsoka beat
this
him.
this is my buddy and we were supposed to roll you guys and now one of us is dead or exploded into dust. She's like, I gotta go back.
I took
and
it
get
as
my,
like confusion force, as to what he was.
I gotta go back and get my Force Black and Decker dust buster and vacuum this whole forest. You know how long it takes to filter pine needles from force dust? It's just a big mess.
Last
so
time
angry.
I forgot to reclaim his face, so we had to make that helmet for him, and he's real pissed about that still.
Yeah,
I don't want to miss any
really,
bits.
Really, really pissed about the whole situation. I really like the sword battle. I am a sucker for like trees.
Hold on. We got some questions here about Marok. What is Marok?
I don't know.
Because
we've never seen
this thing in Star Wars, right? At least not the Star Wars I've seen. Maybe Rebels has a whole bunch of people bursting into dust, but this is new.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, it reminded me a lot of the in Hellboy when the dusty Nazi gets it's like that. It reminded me a lot of that. It reminded me of like the Thousand Suns chapter from Warhammer that all their souls got turned to dust and they got sealed up in their armor and they're just like eternally fighting machines. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. And like I said, if there's something in the Rebels, if there's something in the 13 seasons of Rebels that explains this. I don't know. I don't have it. I haven't seen them.
I feel like some sort of golem type thing, right? Or like it's being animated by maybe the force of another force user somewhere.
See,
or...
that's where I was thinking that, like, did they drain the force power out of Ezra, like his essence, and then just like he's, you know, just like a soulless automaton now, and his force ghost is trapped in this armor or something?
Could be.
But I would think you'd explode in like blue light if that was the case. This green, the sickly green dust is, I don't know. Or is it a gas?
Yeah, it does not feel like a force dissipation to me. It feels like, yeah, there was gas trapped inside that suit.
Yeah.
And it just
the
released.
The green color is, I wonder if they're just saying that he's an alien, like that he has some kind of atmospheric needs. But nah, I,
that's what
felt
I was wondering
like,
too. But he would be dead then, right?
So. It felt more like it. I don't know why, but it felt more like an essence exploding out of a suit than like a gas or an atmosphere.
Gotcha. Well, I guess we'll find out soon enough.
Yeah. Can we? I think the jury's out on this spinny mode lightsaber. This is
I agree.
This is bullshit, man. I know you grinded. I don't know how many quests, and it was supposed to be exotic. But they fucking nerfed it
it's
a couple
purple,
patches
man.
Ago.
The name is
it's
purple.
No good.
He picked it up. It said spinny saber in purple. He picked it up and it looked awesome. The stats were better than his last saber. Apparently it didn't do much good.
It just, yeah, she just sidestepped and fucking cut him down. Like I replayed that scene and watched it in slow motion a couple times, but that's all she really did. Like he went to take a step and moved the spinny saber to the backside, and she just stepped on the other side and cut him in half, and boom, you're done.
Yeah, don't know why you gotta move it at all. Just walk straight at her with that thing spinning, and she's done. I kind of wanted to see a lightsaber clash there as she stepped past him. So it could have been like, oh, well, she blocked and then came around the side, but there's nothing. I know.
He just whiffed. And I watched, coincidentally, late last year, a whole bunch of Kurosawa films because Max had them all for some reason. And this took me back to like the old trilogy lightsaber roots, where it's like they're not a bunch of twirling, whirling dervishes. They feel like two masters sizing each other up, and it's not about a whole bunch. It's not going to be a big flashing pass. It's going to be like one or two strikes, and it's decisive, you know?
Yeah, and they do a really good job with that on the Ahsoka Bailon fight as well later in this episode. That felt like, especially the beginning of that, felt like a classic Star Wars lightsaber battle.
I got another whole heap of praise to put on that lightsaber battle, but nice. I like this, and I like the Clone Wars era fights too. You know, the movies where it's like it's very kinetic and you know Darth Maul versus Obi-Wan, but I also really like the old Anakin or Darth Vader Obi-Wan from A New Hope. Like, that's not flashy.
When it was less about the fighting itself and more about what
about the
fight
people
meant. Yeah.
And the people holding the sabers. And, like, I think the two best lightsabers of all time are Luke versus Vader 1 and 2. Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. And, I don't think lightsaber battles need to be really flashy to be interesting and hold your attention. And this is a good example. I was enraptured.
I had a hard time watching this. I don't know if my panel brightness is up too high or whatever, but if you get this
a little
on
dark
the TV
episode.
And then you got the brilliant flashes of white when the lightsabers clash or roll across the screen, right? And I'm in a darkened room. I'm trying to watch this like optimally, and every time the lightsabers clash or something, I have to squint.
It's funny because
I
watched this in my living room at night with the lights turned off, and I didn't notice anything. But when I was taking my notes this morning and I was watching it on, you know, my monitors, and I got my, you know, everything's lit up in my office, I'm like, fuck, I had to actually turn the overhead lights off because I was having...
Oh.
It's not quite...
The
not
scene
quite
itself
house.
Is dark, yeah.
The scene itself is very dark, and the contrast is high. And I must say, it's not like House of Dragon levels of shit. But like, yeah, maybe they could have done a gamma tone or two brighter.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, it was too bright in the moments that the sabers clashed. That was my only problem.
So it's like it's the strobing effect.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Here's the other thing. The other bone I have to pick with this particular scene. is Valon not training Shin at all? Because I don't believe for a second that a... Well, okay, my complaint is twofold. And one of them is right and one of them has to be wrong. So I don't believe for a second that a non-force attuned lightsaber wielder could stand up for even a minute to a force wielding lightsaber opponent.
Yeah.
And yet here's Sabine doing it. They've told us that she's not force sensitive, but in this scene here in a second, she uses the force to delay Shin, right? She force pushes her shoulder a little bit.
She force butterfly kisses her center mass, I guess.
Oh, it's weak, but it's there. So
yeah, it's definitely, yeah.
It was my impression based on how people were reacting to these episodes that Sabine canonically was not a force user.
Yes.
She was a Mandalorian who trained with a lightsaber, and that was pretty much the extent of it.
Yeah, probably because of the darksaber tie. That's what the other thing I'm getting into is that she was the original possessor or finder, most recent finder of the darksaber, and that might have been the genesis of the training. But I dismissed a lot of this stuff even up to this point in the fight as like, oh well, she's toying. Like I thought it's pretty clear in like when they were fighting in the in front of the radio tower back on the was it Lothari. I thought it's pretty clear she's toying with her. Like I don't get a chance to lightsaber duel with people all that much, and I'm gonna just enjoy. I'm gonna make a meal out of this. And I thought about the same thing of this one too, because they didn't say kill them. They said delay them, hinder them, essentially. Mm-hmm. But I felt like a Marok switch dies. Flipped when Marok dies. Is that his name?
Marok. Yeah.
Marok. When Marok dies, I was like, Barak. Wow, that's. Barry, when he dies and when Sabine says I'll handle her, like I felt like Darth Grimes really got the blood up, and I guess you could say that like from that point forward Sabine was definitely fighting on her back foot. It was a messy running battle with guns and lightsabers. I think you're supposed to understand that the reason that Sabine was able to get the upper hand is that she just underestimated her. She went to go to force push and was like, ah, you have no power. And then she's like, well, I'm a Mandalorian. Eat my wrist darts, bitch. And
yeah. So for I was sure. Like, she I wasn't expecting she was the wrist losing. Darts, but why didn't she kill her just immediately? Like, I don't know. I mean, I know that Shin is an apprentice herself. And she's probably not the best with a lightsaber, but she's got to be better. Like, any ability with the Force would give you a huge advantage, right? Like, that was my impression of the Force. Like, being able to feel the Force and being in connection with it gives you the ability to essentially read your opponent's thoughts before they make their move, right? So,
yeah.
a Force user versus a non-Force user would be just...
pathetic.
I mean, it would be 2 seconds and it's over. It would be like you expect a samurai battle to go, right?
Yeah, I agree, and I don't know why. Like, the thing is, like, if I want to apologize,
they're just really downgrading these force users. Like, every time I see a force user on screen, they get downgraded more and more.
And like I said, I think they're trying to show that Sabine is overmatched. But like, yeah, I think she should have died here. I think they didn't give me an immediate on-screen reason for why Sabine. Now, I mean, the thing is, she is a Mandalorian, and Mandalorians historically did well against Jedi Masters, and she's a very skilled and trained Mandalorian. So it's like, and she's got the Beskar armor. She blocked a couple of fatal against any other humanoid attacker. She's able to block with that the Beskar. So like. I don't know, maybe we're being a little hard on Mandalorians because we're like, well, untrained, but like canonically, Mandalorians were Jedi killers.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they've ever explained how that's possible, with the kind of mind reading abilities that Jedis have. Do they not give off enough of their aura, their force to...
They have like some kind of battle meditation that they harden themselves so they can't
or
be
the
seen
helmets
or,
like you know
the reflexes the are even block. So fast that Jedi can't quite get in far enough ahead of it. I don't know.
If it can keep a lightsaber out that armor, maybe it can keep their force in, right? So you can't sense their force.
Boba Fett handled Luke straight up and is Luke as strong as the Darth Grimes? I don't know. But Boba Fett fucking shuts all that shit down if it wasn't for Han getting lucky with this axe, right?
TBD. I don't know.
Boba Fett sees a Jedi Knight mowing through people in a skiff, and what's he say? He doesn't say I gotta get the fuck out of here. I gotta get Slave One. I'm not getting paid. He's like, fuck this. I'm shutting all this shit down, boy. Mm-hmm. And he almost did it.
Almost.
If only George could hold off making him a fart joke, we might have had.
It's
some
a belch. Come on.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, is that you're sure that that's the Sarlacc's mouth and not its ass? What if it's got a multi-purpose opening?
Fair.
Yeah, a couple thousand years, it's just going to shit all over the desert when it finally has its movement.
I mean, Boba did go in and out of that hole, so.
True.
Anyway.
Ahsoka. Where's it shitting? The planet core? You know, its ass is buried, man.
Yeah. Ahsoka reaches the location where the map is. She confronts Baylan, and they fight while Morgan calculates the hyperspace route. And we kind of see, we're cutting back and forth here. Sabine and Shin are also fighting, and Sabine shows some force sensitivity. Kind of already talked about that. But
What We Do in the Shadows reference. She's the Guillermo of Jedi here, right? Pretty much.
Her wings are not.
She's
fully
the LaCroix of Jedi. Just force flavor. Just a hint. Just wave some force sensitivity past the can.
Yeah, let's get that. Beware the Sith. We will return.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Are you hearing voices too? Welcome back to Tribe of Two. So I like this scene with Ahsoka and Baylan a lot.
I did too.
This feels pretty much like an old school Star Wars type thing.
And this is where I'm like, is Baylan evil? Because like he might be misguided, might be angry justifiably at the Old Republic, New Republic, and Jedi Order. He might be using unlikely allies to get his way, but like I do think he's got a vision that he thinks is good. And again, it could be Thrawn's vision, or not Thrawn, like something like God damn it, what's the? I just said his name, Thanos from Marvel. Like where it's like, no, you're just crazy. That doesn't make any fucking sense.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know whether he's actually got some, like the greatest villain in my mind is if he actually has a point where like your average Star Wars fan is like, damn, that actually might be better than the shitty New Republic that we've seen, you know, the ineffectiveness of it, the corruption. Like maybe he does have a point and he's not a bad guy. I'm really liking what they're doing with him. It's a damn shame that he can't be a recurring character.
Yeah, some good dialogue, some really good lightsaber fighting here.
I love how like there's a noticeable uptick in his intensity where like Ahsoka at one point kind of like gets him in an extended sword lock and then he just kind of like doubles down and then he just really starts using his size and his strength and he's she's blocking it, but like it's like she's deflecting, it's like cutting these giant swaths out of these stone pillars. I love when lightsaber does environmental damage. It's so cool.
There's a lot of cool stuff in the like next half of this scene, but
how do you feel about the reverse sword grip? That's so fucking trendy right now. I feel like they invented this on The Witcher.
Well, I know that this is kind of her signature style. She's been known for this.
Oh, she does reverse hilt grip?
Apparently, yeah. That's a thing. I was reading about her. And yeah, I guess it's a Clone Wars thing.
Why does she only use one lightsaber? Because I thought maybe you use one reverse grip and it's kind of like you got a high and low block. Because there's like, yeah, I do watch a lot of like cringy sword shit on YouTube and like this is one thing that the fucking real sword guys get their dander up when anyone tries a reverse grip. They'll be 17 sweaty dudes in chainmail in some kind of gymnasium standing there saying this is absolutely a shit grip, it's going to get you killed, reduces your range, reduces your power, blah blah blah. It does look very cool.
I agree. I don't think this seems like a very good grip, but it does look cool. I think she usually really does have two sabers. I don't know why she doesn't here.
Yeah.
I want to say...
Was it a sign of respect, or...
Oh, I don't know.
Did she lose the saber in the first fight?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Not that I recall.
Yeah.
And maybe
she just
thought this was a one-saber fight. You know? Like, this guy looks like a one-saber opponent.
We're taking her robes off. That's the sign that this is going to be a one-on-one saber fight. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think it's cool. I think her lightsaber itself is kind of cool, too, where it's kind of cocked to one side, right?
I like that.
It's not straight.
The fancy kind of like Count Dooku-looking hilt.
And
again, I just like when the lightsaber battles are like this still and about gauging your opponent and finding the right time and, getting the right guard and the footwork and the distance, and then it's just like this explode. I think that's just as cool as people jumping around, spinning around, doing 720s and stuff like that. Because that's
kind
like
a combination
kind
of the two, right? You have some pretty cool action here as well, but it all feels like each strike is more important than your typical, pieces of flair type battle. So we go to the second half of the scene where Ahsoka grabs the map. She stops the calculation of the final coordinates. Shin runs back to help Baylan and gets just annihilated by Ahsoka, force slammed into a rock. Sabine, following close behind, sneaks up, grabs the map. Ahsoka tells her to destroy it, but she can't do it because she'd lose Ezra. And then Baylan forces Ahsoka over a cliff. And then turns his attention to Sabine. I think maybe I want to stop there for a second and we can talk about the stuff with Sabine here in a minute.
Does it bother you that Ahsoka didn't know that Sabine? Because like the implication when Darth Grimes runs up and there's no Sabine is that she thinks Sabine's been killed.
Wouldn't she feel that in the Force?
Wouldn't she sense that? Yeah. That close with that strong a connection?
Unless Sabine is not a Force user, and then maybe not. I don't know that
it matters, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure it does. Huh. Yeah, that seems kind of dumb.
I'm trying to think of other canonical examples when, because like you always
I'm
have like
Luke and Leia, yeah.
But they're both Force sensitive. They're twins.
Right. But is there something that was one sided?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of this example where it's like, you know, friends, you know, like they're not sure if someone's dead. So our producer Talitha reminded us that there's an incident in A New Hope where, you know, they're approaching Alderaan, right? And Obi-Wan can sense something's gone bad.
Mm.
Clearly, not everyone on Alderaan is a Force user, but you could also say, well, if a whole fucking planet of life is extinguished, that's something that would cause a disturbance in the Force. Maybe a single person.
Yeah, a blip.
Maybe something about her being a Mandalorian that's like, you know, she's hard for Jedi to read.
Yeah.
This could be Filoni canon. Yeah, there could be 1,000 Force-sensitive emailers out there writing us all as one right now. I don't know, but we'll see. It did bother me a little bit.
I have something important to talk about. Ahsoka sent off the side of this cliff, which raises the question, who is the real fallen Jedi in this episode?
And she can't get up.
Uh-huh.
She's stuck on a star bridge. Do you think that the physical burn to her hand of that Jedi map is going to be significant? Like in
probably
a literal, the crazy hangar Nazi guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Maybe. I don't know that it needs to be with Anakin, you know, out there in
Force
land.
I think Anakin's
going
to point her the way. She'll be able to, like, just the way Luke didn't use his targeting computer to hit the Death Star's weak point. I think they're going to intuit their way through.
I think so.
The
and with Sabine
lane.
Being out there with them, maybe she can feel her in the Force, although we just talked about how she didn't.
Right.
But maybe if she focused up, she could like sense where she is.
Potentially millions of light years away.
Maybe.
Yeah, I know. I mean, in the Force, like with Jesus, all things are possible, right? So like
But they do make a big deal about the hand burn. Why would they do that unless it was important? So that'll probably be something.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see if like because this is like a Witch of Dathomir artifact. Did it like infect her? But I don't know, because so many people touched it before. Why was it hot now? Is it just because it was calculating?
Right.
Was it because it was in its socket? I don't know.
It's like touching your CPU when it's running versus when it's not.
True.
Couldn't tell you. Here's another thing that happened with the Force I thought was really cool this episode is when Baylon's got her kind of on the side of the edge of this cliff and he's bearing down on her with his saber. She's not able to hold him off with one hand, and so she uses the Force to press on the other side of her blade without actually touching it. I thought that was really cool. It's a great way to give her some extra leverage without burning her hand off.
They need to make dueling gloves for lights Jedi, you know, to have like plates of Beskar in the palm so they can grab a blade.
That would make
really
sense.
Really opens up a lot of the fencing manual if you can grab a blade.
Oh, yeah. Here's something I didn't like so much in this scene.
Uh-huh.
Sabine runs up and she just yells, stop. When the scenario I just described about Baylon bearing down on Ahsoka is happening, she just runs up. Yell stop. She has the element of surprise. She could run up, shoot this guy in the back, and all she does is yell stop.
She really thinks
artificial.
She can shoot a Jedi Master in the back. Come on.
But if she does shoot him in the back and he whips around and blocks it, at least Ahsoka is free again, right? Yeah. Like both ways are good here, whether she kills him or not.
Having the thing he wants hostage with literal gun to its head, I thought that was pretty good though. You know? Like
that wasn't her plan.
Not,
she doesn't come in, grab the map, and say stop or I'll shoot. She just says stop. You know, she doesn't say stop or I'll blow up this map.
But she literally has the map in her hand with the gun to it. I think
Ahsoka tells her to go pick up the map.
Oh
yeah.
Shit, you're right. Yeah, you're fucking right. Okay, yeah, I don't know.
It's a really dumb moment. It's one of those moments that's in like every movie where, you know, the bad guy doesn't kill the good guy because X reason or Y reason.
Yeah, it's
moment.
Also really, it's also stupid objectively to try to shoot a dark Jedi when he's got a lightsaber out. But like, I chalk that up to her just being emotionally overcome. Like, this is a frustration. This is Tom Hanks shooting his sidearm at the Panzer at the end of Saving Private Ryan. Kind of like, just like, fuck, you know, like from hell's heart, I spit at thee kind of business.
I'm all out of sock grenades. I guess I'll just
throw a couple 45 rounds at you, see what happens. And hey, faith rewarded. You never know. But I don't. I felt like this was a really good seduction to the dark side. You know, it's.
Yes.
I'll say this: it's a fuck ton better than Palpatine and Anakin.
Yeah.
Oh my God! I killed Sam Jackson. Can I murder children for you now, Master? Like, what the fuck?
Honestly, it's kind of in some ways better than the. Well, it's very similar, I guess, to like the seduction of Luke, right? Or the attempted seduction of Luke.
Luke was a lot more ham-fisted and obvious, but it's also your sister. Your sister and your father.
You know,
I'm telling you what I'm doing to you, and you're going to do it anyway because you are too weak to stand aside and let happen what needs to happen here. Like, that's right. That's less of a seduction and more of like, I already have you and you're fucked. This is a much more seductive. But I liked it. I felt like. Mm-hmm. Again, if I understand the position of the friendship here, where there's bad blood, there's been disappointment, there's been abandonment issues, and this guy, he's got a young Jedi apprentice that seems to be doing well, and he's saying that, like, your master can't be trusted. I can be trusted. In fact, I am your master now. It's just very smooth the way he does it.
Yeah, and he's in her head here, I think. I don't think he's just heard these things about Sabine with Ezra. Yeah. I think he is reading her thoughts.
I think so too, especially when he closes his eyes. It feels like he's pulling things out of her.
Yeah, that's stuff about your family died because your master didn't trust you. I mean, it doesn't seem like he could really know that otherwise.
The other thing we're not talking about is I think Sabine, from what they've shown, is impetuous and arrogant enough to think that she can still win this. Like, if I let them take the map or destroy the map, I can never see Ezra again. But I'm Sabine fucking Wren, and if I get up my set way on that ship, and if I can find Ezra, then the galaxy can't stop us. Like, I think she thinks that. Whereas if she doesn't do it, like, then Ezra's gone forever, and she can't accept that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Especially if she can reunite with Ezra. I think she wants that emotionally, but also power-wise, that'd be pretty formidable, I guess.
And it does seem like she was depressed, like, in a deep depression.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, there's also could be some nihilism behind this of, like, well, if I can't find Ezra, then I literally don't care about what happens to me or the rest of the galaxy.
What do I have to live for? Yeah.
Yeah. Which is not great in your heroic figures, but it's an interesting thing to explore.
No, like I said, they're really making me not like her in the moment. But I think that's going to pay dividends later. So I'm kind of excited about that.
All right.
Then Hera contacts Hu Yang and says, "We're here to assist." And Hu Yang fills her in on the situation. They move to intercept the Eye of Sion. These last few scenes are going to be difficult to recap because we're cutting back and forth, but I'll do my best.
Well, before you do your best, I also want to say, what do you think, or how excited for you are the relationship between Darth Grimes and Sabine? Because, like, as soon as she regained consciousness, she tried to instantly murder Sabine, and Darth Swanson had to call her off.
Oh, yeah, she didn't hear any of that stuff about, why don't you give me the map, come join us, that kind of stuff.
And the implication of a Padawan is that, is she being replaced here?
I mean, we kind of danced around that earlier in the podcast. I don't think so, because I think she'd probably be more upset about that.
And there would probably be
a discussion. There would probably be some pushback from her. Like, I can't believe you're going to take this apprentice.
I mean,
she tried
to murder the girl.
She would have said, "You never taught me anything. I barely know how to use the Force. Why aren't you helping me?"
Why are you old fuckers keeping Force speed to yourself, all right? and more to your point, like, what's the point of being a renegade Jedi if you can't fudge the Padawan rule? You know, if you can't fudge a Jedi rule once or twice, maybe you want to fall in love.
Yeah, I don't think it's a physical thing where you just literally can't have two apprentices.
It's just a rule. This is best Jedi practice. It's also Sith practice, but...
And Ahsoka flouts those rules too, right? I mean, they've made that point several times. She doesn't keep with the old Jedi protocol, so...
True.
Yeah. She is the true fallen Jedi.
And that's something probably also Sabine just like chaps her ass that Ahsoka's always talking about following this, following that, but she is a fairly unconventional Jedi herself.
Mm-hmm. So the calculations are complete and they begin loading up the Eye of Sion for the hyperspace jump. Baylan, on his way out, destroys the star map so no one can follow them, and then takes Sabine to the ship, and they spot Hera's ships closing in, and they jump away through hyperspace, leaving some damaged X-Wings behind.
Did you think it's weird that Lady Morgan says, send the shuttle down to pick up Darth Swanson, and apparently belayed that order and said, you know what, fuck it, send the whole ring down to the planet to pick him up, because the ring was in space.
Yeah, and then
they went down to get
the
map in a shuttle. Mm-hmm. She said go retrieve him in a shuttle, but then it's coming out of the like, what the fuck happened there?
I honestly couldn't tell you. It surprised me to see it in the clouds because I thought it was in a stationary orbit above the planet, but like,
feels like something got lost in editing.
Yeah.
Or like a scene got lost, like maybe something happened to the shuttle. But like what could have happened? Ahsoka's stuck in a star bridge. Sabine is like meekly or passively accepting her fate at this point. Like what? Syndulla's
Huyang came running in, blasted it with those training sabers.
Yeah, came in there. He's also an ace pilot too. He just shot down Darth Swanson's shit. I don't know, that confused me. It's not a big issue. It's just like, felt like I lost the plot for a minute.
Kind of strange.
How do we feel about jumping through ships in hyperspace? Because this is not exactly the Holdo maneuver.
No, not exactly. It's very similar. And I guess if it was jumping through something bigger that wouldn't fit through its ring, it kind of would have been the Holdo maneuver.
But, like, I don't understand how any of General Sidola's ships survived, except for, like, I guess you're supposed to understand that the hyperspace shape is a ring, and it didn't physically pass through them. It's just the disruptive energies of it. It seems like it would damage the ring too. Like whatever the fighters and the Hera's ship experienced, it would have to be kind of like that on the ring. I don't know. I just hate that. That's my least favorite thing in the new canon, that you can ram ships in hyperspace. Oh my God.
I don't hate it. I understand the argument, like, this has never been done, and it seems like such an effective thing. Why wouldn't it be done and integrated, like, really strongly into the military?
Many times the rebellion's been in a desperate situation.
Why wouldn't they have special devices, you know, special ships that are made just for this purpose with no crew or minimal crew?
Giant plates of armor that screen the larger ships.
Yeah. I understand that argument. It doesn't bother me as much.
Hollywood writers would have to crack a naval history book and figure, just reinvent, because that's what they're doing. Like, honestly, you know what? That's not a bad idea. I think anyone who writes for Star Wars wants to write a space battle. You ought to take like a couple week course in naval warfare, because that's what George is going for. He's going for Pacific theater naval engagements in the air and the sea. That's what Star Wars ship battles are. So like, there's a lot of cool shit you can do in terms of formations and tactics and ship types, and it's not just all Star Destroyer versus home one. That'd be super cool and more visually interesting, but you'd have to, like, you know, do some research and get into that. But I don't know. I mean
this is the kind of the root of my complaints with not limiting what you do on a Star Wars show, not limiting your visual language, not limiting, you know, the technology to what we've seen in the past that they have. It can invalidate or make foolish some of the older material. And if you still want to keep that stuff in canon, like, I don't think the original trilogy is ever going to be taken out of canon. You have to also respect it. You can't just say, well, we're going to do this cool thing because it's cool, if it invalidates or makes everything that came before look silly.
Yeah, and the thing that bothered me with the Holdo maneuver is you can do that. You can lampshade it. You could cover it with dialogue. You could have somebody be like, this is some crazy dangerous, or there's like a potential thing with the space-time here. Like, but they just...
Yeah, violating the Treaty of Alderaan.
Yeah, when Rian Johnson does shit like that and it's just like there's no comment, it's like, do they know that this is fucking weird? Because it just feels like they're just doing whatever they want without... And I think that's literally what Rian Johnson is doing. I don't think Rian Johnson gave a shit about deep Star Wars canon. He had in mind of an epic mythic tale that he wanted to tell. It was beautiful, it was gorgeous, and it was deeply flawed from a plotting and character standpoint, but it is what it is. I don't know, and it's a canon event, so
yeah.
What are you going to do?
I mean, there are myriad ways to excuse it, and a myriad ways to, you know, poke holes in it. But I don't know. Ultimately, it doesn't bother me that much because I don't take those movies very seriously.
Jason,
I've got a bad feeling about what about this?
Almost got there. Gas. Had some bad applesauce back in the ship, kiddo. Like,
Or maybe I shouldn't be here. I'm just a child.
Yeah, maybe this is scary, Mom. Why'd you bring me to an active war zone with Imperials and Sith and witches? This is a fucking grim fable you brought me here, Mom.
I think that's just a Mark Wahlberg movie, but
it's the Brothers Grimm. That's sure. Right?
Are they brothers? I don't know.
I think they're brothers.
All right. I don't know. I like this.
Correct us on our Western European medieval literature at starwars@baldmove.com.
I don't mind this. I don't mind Jason saying I got a bad feeling. This is very Star Wars. That's cool. More than one person has said it in the past. More will say it in the future.
Yeah, they did. Like, what do you think about just not actually getting the quote right? Is that we're just riffing on stuff now?
Yeah. Why not? Why not?
So it's like, can we do that with all of our things? Like when the thing comes in to kick some ass, he can say, it's about that time for clobbering.
Okay. I mean, that, sure. I have no love for the comic book stuff.
Phrases.
So yeah, do it. I don't care.
All right. Okay.
Do it there.
Mother, the feeling I have in my guts, it's bad.
If there's a character who said, always tell me the odds, get that shit out of here. Don't want to hear it.
Did you know the Brothers Grimm were like, they're like 17th century dudes. Theirs is not nearly as old as I thought.
Are they real brothers? Can I see some?
Yeah,
some...
Jacob and Wilhelm. What do you think about that?
All right.
Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm.
It's Jacob. That's how you pronounce it.
It's Jacob. Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, I got that wrong.
All right, Hu Yang calls out to anyone who can hear him after finishing the engine repairs, but no one answers.
Yeah.
And then we go back to the cliff that Ahsoka fell off and find her floating in a star map, let's say. She hears a mysterious voice, which turns out to be Anakin Skywalker. End of episode.
Yeah, this was exciting. Like... Oh wow, this looks like it could be momentous. And
where is she? What the fuck is this? Is she literally in the star map? Is she in the place where force ghosts go after they die? Is she dead and that's why she's here?
So I got an email from Zach who says, I cannot believe they dropped this, the place where Ahsoka ends up on the live action normies. The place is called the World Between Worlds. It's a place where time and space are interwoven. Imagine if George Lucas had switched from weed to microdosing mushrooms and LSD. Then had a good think about what the Force is and its greater implications. It's some crazy Force shit that was in Rebels and a little bit in Clone Wars. This involves the Mortis gods and the Jedi temples on Lothal. Good luck with that is all I'm saying. I mean, I think it's a cool idea. And like if Filoni wants to like think through of the implications of the Force and from a practical standpoint, its impacts on the world, I think that's cool too. There's nothing about this that I don't like. It's, yeah, I've been saying this a lot on Foundation. There's nothing you can't do in dramatic fiction. You just got to do it well. You know, execution trumps idea a million times, like 100,000%. So
yeah, great idea with poor execution always falls flat.
Yes.
Bad idea with great execution can sometimes work.
Yeah. Or you can take that bad idea, simplify it, and a simple thing with great execution absolutely beats a complicated good idea poor execution. So I'm not feeling any sort of way about this, because nothing about this, like, it's actually a pretty EU-y trope that, like, you know, do you remember, like, when Luke Skywalker in the beginnings would occasionally be visited by the ghost of Obi-Wan, or he'd have visions like this? Like, this is something the Jedi do. Near-death Jedi, especially, probably. So,
totally.
We'll see.
And I don't hate Anakin Skywalker. I enjoy seeing him on screen. I don't hate Hayden Christensen. I think he got a lot of bad direction from a guy who doesn't know how to direct actors.
Yes. Given
some absolutely unholy dialogue.
You think Natalie Portman forgot how to fucking act?
Right?
No.
Right.
She walked on set and George Lucas starts... And she's looking at all these green boxes and she's dressed in 17 pounds of her mother's drapes and she's like, okay. You got salt and pepper grinders stapled to my fucking hair. Sure, whatever, George.
Hayden Christensen is not the reason I don't like the prequels.
Yeah. Ewan McGregor kind of sucked into Phantom Menace. It wasn't until the second and third prequels that he kind of, you know, found his footing. So, George, gotta love the man for starting the whole thing, but I don't know if he's the best caretaker of this franchise.
Yeah. And I assume he's going to point her in the right direction. We'll see.
Do not neglect your training. We'll be right back. Let's see what knowledge lurks inside this podcast. Here's more Tribe of Two. I'll say this. This is the first episode that I'm actually actively looking forward to seeing. I'm like, goddamn, I can't wait to see where this goes. I guess that means it's hooked me at the mid-season point.
I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It could always unhook me. I could always shake that hook, but
it can let me off the hook. I hope they set it, because I'll run with that line. I'm gonna break free.
All right, and that's it for the episode.
It is it for the episode. Let's do some feedback. StarWars@baldmove.com is how you send us all that feedback. Let's get into it. Matt from Alberta, brother to the north, says, in regards to the lightsabers and Ahsoka's ship.
Yes, I love it.
Ahsoka sells seashells on her shipboard. The Jedi did use low-power training sabers when introducing younglings to the weapons. The children in the blind training scene in Attack of the Clones are using this style. And Attack of the Clone also gives us another explanation of what these might be. On Genosis, Anakin's lightsaber was destroyed, and Obi-Wan's is taken from him by the captors. When the Jedi and clones showed up in the big scene at the end of the movie with the rescue, the Jedi come up and produce two spare lightsabers for our heroes, which the pair use for the rest of the movie, including their fight with Count Dooku. Dooku? I've always seen lightsabers like the wands. Well, I guess I haven't always. Ever since I read Harry Potter, I have conceived that the lightsabers work a lot like the wands in Harry Potter, where it's like they are attuned to a person. And you might like have a special affinity and skill and facility with that lightsaber, but you can pick up another person's lightsaber that's roughly the same model and probably be about as good. It won't be as good, but you're not going to be helpless or anything.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. Apparently, it'll turn your color over time.
Apparently, that's what I'm hearing. Your soul will start to stain your kyber crystal.
Yeah. Oh, that's why his saber's only orange. He hasn't been using it long enough. He stole it from a Jedi. It was blue. That's a pretty big shift all the way to red. It just takes time.
That's just how morally conflicted he is. It's just resisting the rotten corruption, because he's such a good dude. Rob says, you guys hit the nail on the head with your analysis of modern day Star Wars. Without rehashing the tonal problems of The Last Jedi, abandoning the idea of a gray Jedi is the biggest sin of the franchise. When Rin and Rey realize they love each other in that throne room, there's a clear opportunity to move the plot to both of them breaking away from dogma to something new. They could become the gray, form a new order with the Jedi Force sensitive kids we see at the end, and have the Luke Yoda conversation about the failings of the Jedi be the through line. They could have launched a whole new complex Star Wars with light, dark, and gray characters. Instead, we're stuck with whatever sloppy seconds we have now. Yeah, man.
Not this... with Baylon.
Yeah, he's pristine first. I agree with this. I think the biggest sin of the sequels is that they didn't have a plan for them.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, JJ, take the steering wheel. And then he gives it over to Rian Johnson, who violently lurches it in a different direction. And then JJ comes and is like, I don't know about this. And violently course corrects into an even more stupid direction. But there's just no plan. Like, unlike Marvel, mm-hmm. where it's like you had a person with a passion and a plan to do this in a way that you could introduce all these concepts and thought about how to introduce it in the right order and how to do. Star Wars was just like, fuck it. It's Star Wars. How can we fail? Well, by having that attitude, apparently.
You know, it's not necessarily about the ideas in there or anything. It's mismanagement. You have three different people or two different people at the helm, I guess. And you're expecting them to tell cohesive stories without giving them the opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, the brain trust that they had formed after they bought Star Wars to effectively exploit the license just has sucked at your job. That sucked. Mm-hmm. And most of the key personnel are still there. They've got like a creative team now with Filoni and Favre, but I don't know. Still not sure Star Wars is in a great place. Dan says, just wanted to stop and drop two things for you after listening to coverage of episode 3. As someone who's also read The Heir to the Empire, how Thrawn has handled the new canon is definitely unstable ground, but Timothy Zahn actually came back and gave us far more backstory about Thrawn and the Chiss than we ever had before. He wrote 6 new books, beginning his service and rise through the Chiss military all the way through his time as a Grand Admiral of the Empire. Thrawn is a Chiss. That's gotcha. A race of blue-skinned, red-eyed people. The second book in both of the series kind of sucks, but they do lay out the strong tactician that old fans know him to be. So if you want to have a baseline for Thrawn without the cartoons, it's a good place to go. Also, as far as bringing video games to life, the Gray Jedi of it all.
Hold on. So we can't watch these 7 episodes that people say are essential from Rebels or Clone Wars. We're going to read 6 whole novels. I don't know, man.
The thing is because I read there was a new Star Wars Zahn
novel. Timothy Zahn got back in the game
trilogy,
recently.
And I read that, and I'm trying to think, did I read the first few books this Thrawn series? Probably not, because this was like over 15 years ago. I don't know. Yeah, I can't high speed Timothy Zahn's bibliography. But I don't know. I'm not going to obviously do this in the middle of the season, but Thrawn is one of my favorite characters, and if they really hook me good, I could see myself going to, you know, because I kind of wanted an entry point back into, like, expanded Star Wars stuff. I'm reading a lot more now and reading science fiction, and it's fun to have a book you can finish in a day or two that's, you know, good, a decent... I remember some of those things were fucking barn burners, man. I lost many hours in sleep in junior high and high school. Showed up bleary-eyed to many a day because I just couldn't stop reading the latest whatever Star Wars book. Some shit ones, too, but... as far as bringing the video games to life, the Gray Jedi of it all, remember one of the best Star Wars games, Knight of the Old Republic, explores the middle ground between Jedi and Sith and has one hell of a story that isn't Palpatine somehow returning. Man, I made 3 attempts to get into the Knight of the Old Republic, and I never could. I thought the game part of it sucked too bad.
I beat it. I was interested in it because it was kind of an early, let's say, Bethesda-style RPG. And it seemed like it had quite a bit of options and freedom of choice and stuff. And I found it really compelling. I thought Knights of the Old Republic was awesome. I finished it, but that was 20-plus years ago. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Remember Darth Revan's in that or something? I don't know.
It never felt like Star Wars to me, and I think it's because it was based on like Dungeons and Dragons. The Star Wars, there's a Star Wars, so you had the West End games is D6 based, and then someone took over the license and essentially hammered Dungeons and Dragons 3.5 into the Star Wars shape. And it always felt like that to me. It's like, I'm not using a lightsaber. I'm using a, you know, like they didn't do a very good job of translating the universes, I didn't think. And I felt like that came across in the game. Like, there's some, this feels like a weird adaptation of Star Wars rather than Star Wars. And I didn't like the gameplay either. But I've heard the story is really great. Maybe I need to find, that's something I wouldn't mind watching, like a 30-minute explanation for what the hell happens in Knights of the World Republic, because I miss a lot of those references too.
I tried playing KOTOR 2 and I got to a bug where I couldn't travel to the planet I needed to go to and I stopped playing. So I never finished that one.
Going back to the Timothy Zahn thing, it's like, does that make me feel better? No, because George Lucas, in my opinion, has fucked up his own works. Like, he doesn't interpret his own works correctly. He goes back and makes Han not shoot first because he thinks Han is a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't become a good guy. He is a good guy. He would never shoot a person in cold blood, even as... And shit like that, like, the same way with Spielberg putting walkie-talkie, you know, covering up the guns in E.T. It's just stupid. It's just stupid. So, like, did Timothy Zahn, did Dave Filoni show up with a beer and say, you know what, I always liked Grand Admiral Thrawn, George Lucas, or the Lucas Arts or Lucas or whatever Incorporated just throughout all the EU, but I want to bring Thrawn back and I want you to help, and Dave and Zahn's like, fuck yeah, brother, let's do this. Did he show up with like a dump truck full of cash and be like, the mouse has bade you write more Thrawn, so get to writing? I don't know. If it's the former, I'd feel a lot better about the situation than the latter. But
maybe if they had had Han and Greedo use walkie-talkies and have E.T. shoot first, I think that could have solved everything.
We all know deep down E.T.'s a motherfucker, right? Oh, that was all an act. Yeah. He's gangster.
He was just trying to act cool for his Reese's Pieces.
Yes. As soon as he got that fix, he was looking for blood.
Yeah. It's like the Jim Hadar. Yeah, they won't turn on you as long as you
tried to drain
yourself.
The life force out of a small boy to keep himself going. That's dark. Uh-huh. That's pretty dark. but the other thing is, like, I don't care, because at the end of the day, I still have my Thrawn. If I want to go back and read Heir to the Empire and Captain Pelion and Joris Kaboth and all that stuff and Y Solarami, and they're still all there, right? I could do it. So if the kids want a Thrawn that's like not the same as mine, I don't care. But I might not watch it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Dennis says, it's been an argument over droid rights for quite a while. There's some much canon that says the reason droids' memories are wiped so often and after missions is not just to protect vital info, but also because if you let a droid go unwiped long enough, they develop sentience and personality. The best example of this is R2-D2. I seem to remember that.
Yeah, why do I remember that?
Probably because it's a piece of Star Wars canon that you have to, and what the it's like R2-D2 is the only droid in the entire original two trilogies that had not been mind wiped throughout the whole period, you know. So like,
did we talk about this when we saw the droid bar?
In Mandalorian.
And yeah, we might have talked about it then. I wanted to say Andor, but I don't think it was Andor.
How do we feel about a platform that's capable of sentience, but as long as you do maintenance to it, it's not going to be sentient?
I think I'm okay with that, but it's kind of sticky because how long can you wait to wipe these things? How do you tell?
You know,
is there
like
some diagnostic you can run to see if this thing has attained sentience?
Do you know, because I started running down, like, okay, so like, if every droid is sentient capable, but it takes a while to boot that stuff and all those structure, you know, the experiences and all that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, what? It started to feel like I was having an abortion argument.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
So at what point in the droid's conscious development can you pull the plug and it's not... And if like, oh shit, you win a year without wiping your droid, is there a droid protection service that comes up and confiscates them because they're now citizens of the New Republic? I know that's not what Star Wars happens, but I'm like thinking like,
I would hope so.
Maybe that's why no one's ever touched, because like everyone's like, you know what, we should try to do something with, like, you're either going to run straight into slavery and have people come to grips with Luke Skywalker being a slave master, or you're going to get into, you know, pro-choice arguments, which I imagine a lot of Hollywood people would not want to interject into a Star Wars thing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Or maybe it'd do us good to come to the realization that Luke Skywalker is a fucking slave master. and you know,
look, dude, like, we can't even say the word slave in Star Wars canon now. They're retconning the name of Boba Fett's ship. There's no chance they deal with that.
Is that hold true for all the Star Wars or just the kiddie side? Because like I feel like Andor,
the models are now are called like Fire Spray class.
That's the kiddie now. Shit, right? They're not making Lego models of
model kits like. People are building. I'm like, shit, I want to build one of these, but they don't call them Slave One anymore. Bandai's gone back and now calls it Fire Spray.
So a bounty hunter that ice cubes up dudes, right, dead or alive, right, for hire, cannot have an offensive ship name.
Yeah, apparently you can't say the word slave. I don't know how they get around that in canon with Jabba.
Like I said, it's
but like.
It's tough for me to say. I don't know what people get triggered by what, and you know, it's Star Wars. At the end of the day, we're supposed to have fun. But that does this strikes me without too much thought as being kind of goofy. Anyway,
yeah.
Brian says, when you have a lot to say, when you said you had a lot to say about Ahsoka going on the wing, I was waiting for you to disregard for basic physics observations that you made many times in Strange New Worlds. At least in Star Trek, you know that once they put on the mag boots and go outside the ship, you need to keep your feet on the hull or you float away. Ahsoka makes two jumps on the second she's floating off the ship, which is accurate. She should have floated away on the first jump as gravity is negligible.
Nah, this is fine. She's a Jedi.
There you go. I thought about making this argument, but I'm like, it's dumb because the Force, you know.
Yeah, she could pull the ship to her if she wants, you know.
I've seen Darth Vader pull a Star Destroyer out of orbit.
I've seen Yoda lift one out of a swamp.
They're like, not jumping with their leg muscles, man. They're moving their bodies with the Force. So it's like, Star Wars is the one universe where they can get a little wonky in their space physics, and it doesn't. You know,
character, yeah.
I'd still be upset if they threw a bone stock human out of a ship and they die. Like, I didn't have a problem with Leia doing that because, again, she's a fucking Force user. But if you threw Han Solo out of airlock and he did anything but die within 20, 30 seconds, it would be like, what?
Yeah.
So, Marcus says, Rebels and Clone Wars are the best Star Wars we've gotten outside of Andor and The Mandalorian. The stories and themes are mature and compelling in a way that you can't understand if you haven't watched. The reality is, those stories are canon, and Star Wars is one continuous timeline. You absolutely cannot separate animated storytelling from live action and pretend as if they don't exist because of the medium of storytelling isn't one you approve of. The same way that Lower Decks is animated and Strange New Worlds is live action, though Gasp, they had a crossover and exist in the same universe. Though that is not a one-to-one because the tone of Lower Decks is decidedly different, whereas the animated Star Wars content is much more similar to live action. You and Jim repeatedly comment on your lack of knowledge or understanding of the Thrawn character in canon as opposed to Legends, as if it is some flaw with the storytelling in Ahsoka. But you could watch a 10-minute supercut of YouTube on YouTube of Thrawn and Rebels and get more than enough of an understanding. I don't doubt that there will be an introduction in live action, but the reality is this is a continuation of a larger story with the characters who have pre-existing arcs, motivations, and relationships between each other. Be like someone saying, who's this Luke asshole and why is everyone looking for him, while watching episode 7 for the first time because they refused to watch the OT because it looked old or some stupid shit like that. It just feels like your Ahsoka pods are 90 minutes to get off my Star Wars lawn. Oh, you get it. You get it. You understand, Marcus. That's exactly, you cracked the code. This podcast is for middle 30s to middle 50s. Star Wars, probably moms and dads that like was super into this shit and just don't know what the fuck is going on. And it's all loud noises and green skin this. And we're like, what the fuck is going on? Get off our fucking Star Wars lawn. Would you like to add anything?
I watch Star Trek Lower Decks. I'm not opposed to watching Rebels and Clone Wars. I simply haven't. I think, from a business perspective, they need to be doing this more thoughtfully, because I would say most Star Wars fans have not seen Clone Wars or Rebels, right? I mean, maybe that's a massive misjudgment of the Star Wars audience, but I would say it's different when you have a series of movies that are titled by episode numbers to say, hey, you're an idiot if you think they shouldn't reintroduce Luke Skywalker here, because I don't know who Luke Skywalker is. Well, yeah, go watch episode 4, 5, 6, go watch all those because those are movies in a series. This is an entirely different show. This is an entirely different set of characters. Like,
if this was built as Rebel season 13 or whatever, we probably wouldn't start it.
This is not Rebels 2. If this were Rebels 2, I probably wouldn't watch it because I didn't watch Rebels 1.
Right.
I'm not going to jump into the Matrix and watch the third Matrix movie. I'm not, like, that would be unfair of me. I think from a business perspective, it's a bad idea to assume that everybody has seen everything Star Wars. It's just not true. It's not true in a way that it kind of is true over on the Marvel side. Most people have seen, if they've seen anything Marvel, they've seen almost all of Marvel.
Yeah.
But they do it better over there. They do it much better. They give me the details I need to know in the movie I'm watching. And they don't really care if I've seen the rest of it.
You are starting to see the cracks, I think, in even that approach, because I don't know what to say, because, like, I also don't think they're analogous. Like, I have never seen the Lower Decks. I don't like the Lower Decks. I tried to watch the first two episodes. I thought it's not for me. I had no trouble understanding the vibe of Lower Decks, the character of Bomer, how he fits into Star Trek Strange New Worlds. It's like I didn't have, like, they gave me everything I needed to know. In fact, if I go into episode 7 and they're like, who's this Luke Castle? He's the brother of the head of state. That's something. He's something called a Jedi Master, which seems to be something that, you know, it's like they tell you enough that you need to know about Luke to understand how he impacts that story. And I honestly think they're doing the same thing of Ahsoka. So, like, I haven't lodged that particular complaint. But when I look at a review of something that's like an established work that has, like, I'm getting into something new. Like, I did this when I got into, like, started watching Sandman. I'm like, Jesus Christ, there's so much Sandman stuff. Where should I begin? Well, they were smart enough to know that, like, most people watching the Sandman TV show as not familiar with Sandman, so I have to explain all those concepts. And a lot of times you'll read with a sequel series, like, you'll see a line in review that says something like, this is an excellent on-ramp for new fans because it's a brand new story and there might be some characters and you might appreciate some Easter eggs and backstories, but you don't need to know that stuff to jump in and get in. And then you'll read a review that says, you know, while this is a decent blah, 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 it doesn't offer much for people who are not already fans to get in. I thought Ahsoka was marketed as the former, that this is a good on-ramp for people who don't want to watch 87 fucking seasons of cartoons. And I think it has been. So, like, yeah, I don't know. But my complaints last episode were not that, like, they didn't explain it. It's just like it was just a whole bunch of Star Wars retreads. It was treading like plot water at the same time. I don't know, but yeah, this is two old Star Wars men that not happy with the state of their formerly beloved franchise. And I think there's a market for that. I've looked on iTunes and YouTube's. There is a lot of people there to tell you that Ahsoka is amazing and great, and tell you all the connections to the Clone Wars and the Rebels and all that stuff. And people don't want that. It's out there. Find it. This is for the rest of the people who are just trying to figure it out or having fun with it and taking a piss out of it. And if that's not the podcast you want to listen to, get off our yard, because that is the podcast this is. All right, let's move on. Unless you have... Does your spleen need further venting?
No, you've vented
enough
for both
of us. I guess I shouldn't
speak
for you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Lonnie, coming from the other side, says, I think they should just waffle stomp all upcoming Star Wars projects except for Andor and reboot the whole IP using Andor as a starting point. I don't know if
that.
I...
They've already done that.
What?
It's not Andor as a starting point, but they did. They said, we've got to stop making movies because we fucked it up so bad, right? Like,
yeah,
they
right?
had this whole run where they were doing, you know, Rogue One and Solo and all these side projects, and they canceled and killed all that stuff. And then they rebooted it with The Mandalorian.
Kathleen Kennedy woke up in her bed, hungover, surrounded by piles of coke. It's like, did I just sign the double D's? to a fucking trilogy of oh shit. What are the ratings for season 8 of
Netflix
Game of Thrones?
And get something
oh
else
god,
going for them.
Oh yeah, we I got to swindle the Netflix idiots into taking this, cuz we can't, like, it's been pretty bad. But here's the thing. I think making everything in Star Wars look like Andor would be just as big a mistake as making everything in Star Wars look like Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. There needs to be Star Wars for kids, Star Wars for family, and yes, now that there are Star Wars adults, I would like for there to be some adult Star Wars. It doesn't have to be fucking and decapitation and John Wick shit, but it has to be serious like Andor. And I would like the mouse that seems like they have they got a streaming service where you have to balance all this shit, mature stuff, people for adults, stuff for kids, stuff for babies. Like, just do that with Star Wars, guys. And that way I can choose which track of Star Wars I want to engage with. I can just do family and adult stuff and all the kiddie shit, all the Saturday morning shit I can skip out on.
Yeah, I think Star Trek is running rings around Star Wars right now in that regard.
Isn't that
they're
wild?
Right? Because after Insurrection, I would have said Star Trek is pretty much dead and nobody likes it anymore. And they came out with, Disco, and I was like, it's not for me, but it's like kind of more action-oriented, serialized kind of thing. And now they've got stripes for everybody, right? They've got the old nostalgia stripe if you want to get in on Picard. And some of it wasn't very good. Some of it was. Now you've got Strange New Worlds for those old school fans, right? You've got Prodigy for the kids, which might have gotten canceled. I can't remember. You've got Lower Decks for people who want some comedy, like a lot more comedy in their shows. I think they're doing a great job over on Star Trek. Star Wars needs to find that footing for sure. And it's like they're coming close. They're getting there, I think.
And there was a lot of fits and starts on the Star Trek side too. It took them a while to get their shit together and kind of figure out. But now it's like, yes, it feels like it's firing on all cylinders, and Star Wars is still sputtering. Even though I think we're in the third. This is again the Filoni and Favreau. I feel pretty good about it. But this is the third kind of like, oh shit, we need to completely rethink what we're doing to Star Wars here.
Yeah.
When's the last time we had a Star Wars movie? Before the pandemic, right?
Was it Solo? Was that the last one?
I think so. So, I don't know.
It's been years. It's,
like I said, I don't think doing everything Andor style is the answer to. It's clear that the mouse is not going to decanonize everything and start from a clean slate anyway. So I hope someone like Favre and Fellini can go through, and that's one of the things I really like about, for example, Star Trek. Strange New Worlds is it seems like that brain trust is very interested in going through the old canon that is wildly all over the place in terms of tone, in terms of politics, in terms of power capabilities and tech. And it seems like one of the things they're doing is trying to, like, with this new series, thread all that stuff and stitch it together and make it meaningful. And I hope that Disney can do that with Star Wars. There's too much money for this to languish in futility forever. I hope Favre and Fellini figured out, but I don't know. Still mixed results. Christine says, ultimately, I blame Disney for the original sin of turning EU books into legends. I'm 39, and those original books were like my Star Wars Bible. I was pissed when I found out the sequel trilogy was not using the very excellent material they'd already established for them to use. Now, I don't hate that people are trying to correct that wrong, even though it's different now. It's the sequel trilogy's fault that they can't do those same stories now, as they no longer fit into the trajectory of the story in the same way. Yeah, that's the big shame about the sequel trilogies, is that picked a direction for Star Wars to go in, and no one wanted to go in that direction. Nobody wanted to go.
Like, and how do you run that back, right? How do you roll that back? You decanonize three of the films?
I've met people who are the Force Awakens fans. I've met people who are the Last Jedi fans. I have never met a fan of the entire sequel trilogy. And in fact, they're almost violently opposed to each other. In fact, I don't even know if I've ever seen a person that's like, you know what? Rise of Skywalker, pretty fucking good. It's like exclusively people to like, why couldn't things be like the Force Awakens versus the Force Awakens with bullshit and boring and retread. Last Jedi, super cool, new, visual, groundbreaking. It's the damn shame is the trajectory of that sequel just was in a direction that nobody wanted to go to. Like Christine says, I also wanted to add that Thrawn is still the same cool, calculated nemesis that he uses, that uses species art and culture against them in battle. He actually does that to Hera at one point in Rebels on her home planet of Ryloth. Well, that's cool, because that's the thing that makes Thrawn cool. He's a thinking man's admiral. And he also still has a freaky bodyguard in Rebels, though he wasn't on the ship that got purged away, so I'm not sure where he ended up. Point being, it shouldn't all be that different. It's just going to be a different story to tell with him in this time period. And that's fine. Like, if it's the essentialness of Thrawn is his cerebral approach to warfare. And his emphasis on like logistics. And not just like tactics.
The gears of war. Is Marak his freaky bodyguard? I don't know. I don't know anything about the freaky bodyguard.
That would be interesting if that dude is a Nergiri. Yeah, I could get that. That would be kind of cool. I do think that, like, if this guy's anywhere, he's just searching for Thrawn, right? He's a fanatical follower. Mm-hmm. But that's the other thing. Is the backstory of that race the same? Are they, like, all, like, do they worship this? Are they worship the Skywalker? It's like, so that's the thing. It's like, and this goes back to Marcus's thing, get off my lawn. It's like, I tried to be thoughtful, and now I'm just going to be pugilistic the rest of the season. I'm just saying, this shit was canon, and now it's not. And people are like, you're refusing to accept the new canon. Well, you're refusing to accept the old canon. Let's have a fucking schism. I'm going to, like, put on a hair shirt and nail... There's 39 Star Wars novels to all you fucks' doors one night, and we'll just have a reformation. You know, you guys can break off and do that shit. We'll still have our clergy in robes and giving out the wine. I don't know. I don't know where this all goes, but it's just like, it's very frustrating to have someone say, like, you're just not accepting the new canon, when it's like, well, I did, and the only thing I did was get old. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. Like, they're just telling me all my favorite people are they didn't exist. Like, that Luke Skywalker that you thought was so cool didn't exist. He was just a cranky old blue milk swilling hobo on a planet with his X-Wing in the ocean while the New Republic bleeds because he's butthurt that his Jedi Academy didn't take off. Okay, that's Luke Skywalker now. Great. Great.
Well, eventually you'll die and everybody will forget about the old canon and...
True.
Disney can move on and continue.
Not my luck. I'll turn into a Force ghost and I'll just be doomed to watch preceding generations make Star Wars dumber and dumber. But Steven says, I think you're being a little too harsh on this episode of Ahsoka. Speaking of episode 3, I'm not going to try to claim this the best episode of Star Wars TV or anything like that, but much of your criticism seems to stem with the fact that we have seen some of these concepts and even specific scenes in previous Star Wars media. This paragraph annoys me. I'm not going to try to claim this the best episode of Star Wars TV or anything. Can I ask, why shouldn't it be? With the amount of money, talent, technology...
Look, I always hold media up to the high watermark of that same media. Always. Like,
right.
If something isn't, you know, the best of the genre, the best of its type, then... It is a minor failure. I mean, it might still be very good and very successful, but it is not as good as the best stuff I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's like, I want to be like, you know, with The Expanse, like, Naren Shakar built this thing in a cave with spare parts, and the mouse is coming to me, poor fisting, like, it's not the best episode. Why shouldn't it be? Billions of dollars were spent on this. People with... collectively hundreds of years in this industry with experience and like two giant like why are we saying this is the Walking Dead all over again? Why are we accepting mediocre on this?
Yeah,
like every Star Wars theory that comes out should be the best fucking one, right?
Oh, I'm with you. Everything should be the quality of storytelling that Andor is. Maybe not the same tone, but the quality.
Steven says, I think it's important to remember that Lucas had a sort of rule about Star Wars that does not repeat itself, will often rhyme. Oh my God. So like, this is a quote that made me piss blood and my head explode when I heard Lucas utter it for the very first time on the prequel bonus material. Mm. And if you think that he was doing this shit in the original trilogy or doing anything other than smoking weed and trying to comment on the Vietnam War and make a fun Republic serial science fiction film, you're as deluded as Lucas got. Lucas, I think it's been long my contention that Lucas read his own press, huffed his own farts, believed all that Jungian bullshit about archetypes and the hero's journey, and thought he was on to something. And then he was exposed in the prequels. He's exposed for a big idea guy and a talented visual filmmaker. Because there's some shots in the Clone Wars that's fucking amazing. But he can't, he doesn't have a handle on dialogue. He doesn't understand why characters care about each other. And thus, he can't make those same emotional connections with us. Except for he did with a whole fucking legion of Star Wars fans. So I'm obviously wrong. I don't know.
You're gonna drive Aaron crazy. You're gonna do it.
I am because it's a contradiction. I have all these people boldly asserting facts I already know that I've made completely different conclusions from. Like, what do I do with this? What do I do with these guys?
I guess you rant. You rant on a microphone.
I do. I get off my lawn. Get off my lawn. Why are you doing it on my lawn? You're making my lawn brown. Get out of here. I do like Steven's point here. He talks about, like, you know, maybe we're a little bit hard about the fact that last episode rehashed so much Star Wars stuff. He says, you're missing the point. Sure. For example, in the training scene with Ahsoka and Sabine, we've seen that same scene with Luke and Obi-Wan. We know how Luke did with that lesson. We are also told that Sabine has virtually no connection to the Force, yet we see Sabine do roughly as well as Luke did. This seems to call into question whether Sabine's connection to Force is actually as weak as it's been stated, or if it's just different in some way. So, like, you're right. I think I missed the point of that scene. If that is indeed the point, that we're supposed to compare and contrast it to how Luke did. We're supposed to compare and contrast Ahsoka to Obi-Wan. And we're supposed to realize that Sabine is a little bit stronger with the Force than we might have been led to believe. So I'll recognize that I gave into my hate a little bit. And I might have missed that.
I will say the vast majority of coverage I've seen of that episode is very much along the lines that we were following there. Like, this is kind of just taking all of the elements, all of the scenes of Star Wars, and putting them into one episode. I don't know if it's fair to criticize it necessarily for that. I mean, criticize it on its own merits, I guess, because, again, I like The Force Awakens, and I will admit 100% that is just kind of rolling back A New Hope.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
But, so I don't think we're alone on that island.
I will say that
maybe it's not totally fair.
Even granting the stuff that I missed in that scene, I will still say it could use some old George Lucas direction, faster, more intense.
Okay. Like,
if we are treading over Star and we're just wanting to pay attention to the differences and stuff, like, I think that scene could have been a double tempo and it would have retained its utility and not felt like it's just, because that's the thing, like, that episode is, now that I've seen this episode, they had an episode where it's like they need to get to this place and they have to do like maybe 5 minutes worth of character development, but also we don't have enough time to get into the next thing. So it's like, it just felt like a clearing your throat episode, which I always think is bad pacing, you know? But anyway.
Yeah.
Or maybe
it's weird
to say
we don't have enough time. I never understand that in the world of streaming.
Right. Why do you think we have 2 hour podcasts for 30 minute episode of television? Space? Bandwidth?
And
data?
It's all
a construct, you know?
We're not selling ads. We're not.
Wait, what?
Trying to hit a certain amount of time. I'm talking about the TV shows. Like, you don't have to do any of that. You don't have the constrictions that you have in broadcast television. So why do I care that an episode is too long to be its own episode, but too short to be two episodes? Just jam it all together.
That's what I'm saying. And I used to find that excuse a lot more compelling when people were forced to hit, like, you got to have a 42 minute episode.
Right.
You got to have a 23 minute episode if it's a half
hour. Of course.
But, like, that hasn't been true in streaming for a couple of years now. That, like, you'll have, you know, we talk about Severance, how, like, it was the master of that. You'd have a 25 minute episode, a 57 minute. It's however long that chapter needed to be.
Right.
And they do that on stuff. So it's like, I don't understand why we have these weirdly paced transition episodes anymore. It shouldn't be like that. You know, or find a way to make the transition interesting. Liminal spaces, so hot right now. Get liminal with it.
And if that part of your story is not interesting enough to make it compelling, cut it. You know?
I can't believe we're getting this pugilistic on an episode of Ahsoka we kind of liked. So, Dave says, Filoni's plan for the Thrawn cycle is to introduce him to Ahsoka, then continue the story in Mandalorian's next season, and then finally make a Thrawn movie. Take that for its worth, but it sounds right to me.
Why can't you just tell this story in a show? Why can't you just call the show Thrawn and tell this fucking story all the way through? Money.
Oh, that's boy. Money. I hope Mandalorian's sturdy enough to do a Thrawn, because introducing him in Ahsoka is fine. You don't want to step on Ahsoka's toes too much, I guess. But I don't think a Mandalorian is like, I think Mandalorian is solidly an entertaining but Saturday morning cartoon in its aesthetics and plotting and all that kind of stuff. Whereas I always think Thrawn is a little bit closer to Andor. But a Thrawn movie sounds like fucking really cool. So
it feels like they're trying to make Mandalorian the backbone of Star Wars right now. And I don't think it's strong enough to hold the rest of it up.
It's
the
cool.
Full skeleton.
He's really cool. And it feels like Star Wars and it's fun to watch. But you're right. Is it sturdy enough to be the... But I don't know. Like, we'll see what Favre and Filoni come up with. Matt from Philly says, as a fan of the Rebels TV show, I can't help but feel those characters don't really blend with how they're depicted in Ahsoka. In Rebels, Hera always had was always motherly and strategic. She reeled in other characters from stupid decisions. Sabine had a witty sense of humor. Only Ahsoka feels roughly the same. Why was the choice to make these characters feel so stoic and tough? Their personalities feel now too similar to Ahsoka herself. Are you finding their personalities this way, or is this a Rebels-only problem? And I hate the excuse that the characters are older, so they've just completely changed. Ah, I find that
been through
excuse
a war.
Compelling.
I mean, yeah, I'm kind of okay. War changes people for sure, but I don't have that relationship with them from before, right? So what do I know?
I mean, when you think of Jedi Masters, when you think of generals, they are stoic and tough. And then you got Sabine.
Look at Luke in Return
of
the Jedi. Right?
Right.
He comes back. He's totally different.
Yeah. Towards it's like it weirded out all of his friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But like the thing is, like, this might be a Rebels only. Like, because I watched a few clips. Like, I watched a 10-minute clip on why Chopper is a war criminal. He's a bastard. He is a fucking bastard. But there's a lot more humor in Rebels than I appreciate. It's like, I think people that say, oh, this is so, I think there are mature and interesting things, but I think people are lying to us that you don't have to wade through a whole lot of Saturday morning kiddie humor cartoon shit to get to it, because a lot of what I watched in that 10-minute chopper clip was pretty lowbrow, 6-year-old pleasing humor involving droids and the heroes it's supposed to serve. But
if this was maybe the guy, sorry,
I was just to sum up, Matt, I think there is a huge whiplash between how maybe silly and lighthearted the characters are in the cartoon versus the live action. But I would almost say that, like, I wonder if we would feel differently, like, if Ahsoka was like super expressive and you know, they had all this, like, you know, comedy and like you know, like the Marvelification dialogue, that kind of like pithy, like would that feel like it's a little too kiddy for us?
Not necessarily. I enjoy things like that. I mean, look, I enjoy Lower Decks and it's a lot of that. I would say maybe you're on to something if this wasn't a Filoni project, because, you know, the guy who made the characters is making this show. He's got to be aware of the characters he created before, and he's doing something intentional, right?
But what if he's doing the Lucas thing where it's like he did all those and it's a cartoon? He's like, you know, if I always could have done this live action, I would have done it differently and I would have made it. And now he's like correcting.
Maybe
for,
so. Maybe
this is
so.
Like the ultimate version of his. Mm-hmm. I don't know either. And I, like I said, I don't have a problem with that. You can do anything as long as you do it well. And I think the average execution on Ahsoka for the plotting has been mediocre. This episode is like, again, the first one where I'm genuinely looking forward to seeing what happens next instead of just like, oh, it'll be fun to watch the lightsaber show. I'm actually, again, I can't wait to see where they're going with Anakin. I can't wait to see how Ahsoka meets back up with Sabine. I am totally in on Darth Swanson, etc. So I think that's going to do it this week for feedback. Okay. StarWars@baldmove.com. If you would like to tempt fate and step on these old men's lawns, StarWars@baldmove.com. If you'd like to find out what else we're doing when we're not yelling at kids to get off of our Star Wars property, you can follow us on social media at BaldMove. All the social medias, except for TikTok. I did that certain point of view thing. TikTok is Baldest Move. You can also, if you'd like to support us and keep us doing the podcast, keep us eternally on our mission of keeping Star Wars kids off of our space lawns. You can do that at support.baldmove.com. We'd appreciate it. And you can get a lot of cool stuff for yourself. Ad-free feeds, extra bonus content, lunch with Jim and Aaron, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Support.baldmove.com. Thank you very much for joining us. Hope we didn't bruise too many people's feelings too badly. It's all in good fun. I only uncork this much on shit that doesn't matter. Like, you know, this is my reward for having to be infinitely patient with my family when I'm talking to them about politics and stuff. I can just fucking uncork on Star Wars fans. So appreciate that. It's an important part of my mental health. Until next week, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
May the Force be with you.